You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Bike Riders, a new film from Jeff Nichols starring Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy. Inspired by true events, The Bike Riders follows Benny, played by Austin Butler, the newest member of Midwestern motorcycle club The Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. Critics are calling it electrifying, stunning, exhilarating, powerful, and the godfather of biker movies. Experience The Bike Riders on the big screen this summer. Now playing only in theaters. Visit BikeRidersMovie.com to get tickets now.
What's good, everybody? Welcome to the Cooligans Women's World Cup Daily. I'm excited about today's show because I have a special guest next to me. Normally, it's Alexis Guerrero's next to me, but no, we have a Liverpudlian, you know, somebody with a little whose accent is a little bit different than a New Jersey, Newark accent. But I'm excited to talk Women's World Cup and NWSL and obviously some Everton with assistant coach for the OL Reign, a man who I've been following on Twitter. We connected over Everton a long time ago, and now he's finally joining me on the show. Please, everybody, welcome Scott Parkinson, everybody. Scott, what's up, dude?
Thank you so much for having me on, mate. I've got some big shoes to fill today, haven't I?
I think so. You're going to have to be, I don't know what your stand-up comedy chops are like, and I don't know how much you know about pizza, because those are Alexis is both skills.
You know what? New Jersey and pizza, it's the best pizza I've ever had, ever.
Okay. That's, a lot of people would agree with you. I think even Alexis might not agree with you, but I don't think it's that far off. There's a certain level of snobbery when it comes to Alexis's pizza knowledge that I think can be a little bit intimidating, and so he would have a lot to say about it. So I'm just filling in for him right now. He would be condescending to you right now if he was here.
He looks like he likes pizza. I would agree.
That is the kindest way to say what you just said. Thank you so much, Scott. Let's get started, everybody. Welcome to the show again. My name is Christian Polanco. I'm joined by Scott Parkinson. And obviously, the Women's World Cup matches, there was one last night and there was one this morning. Spain played against the Netherlands. Exciting matches. The Spain match, this, where I'm on the East Coast. Scott, you're on the West Coast. Yep. Are you in Seattle proper? Yep. Or okay, cool.
Yeah, proper. Yeah, Alki Beach, beautiful little spot.
Amazing, amazing. Yep. And so the frustrating thing for me was that that the Netherlands scored. This game was at 9 p.m. Eastern time. The Netherlands scored late in the second half. When I felt like I was going to get some good sleep so that I could prepare for the Japan-Sweden match, which was at 3:30 a.m. And yeah. No, the Netherlands had to, you know, ruin everybody's sleep on the East Coast. But it was a nice goal nonetheless. Your first thoughts for this game, and and we'll get macroscopically, we'll talk about the Women's World Cup. But what do you think of this game? Because obviously the Spain ended up winning, but this was quite an entertaining match once the Netherlands scored that goal.
Yeah, it was. It was a great game. I think Spain in the first half were brilliant. I think what was interesting was Holland pressed them. And Holland have been quite mid-block, not letting anyone get in between the lines, kind of keeping it tight. And they went after them. They changed shape a little bit. I think one of the things that's been impressive with Holland is how tactically flexible they've been. Little tweaks here and there. Kind of played a double pivot, which I think they thought was going to help them. But Spain found a way of, when that press come, of getting through the lines and creating a ton of chances in the first half, and probably should have been miles ahead. And I think second half.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. As far as even after the first half, I was like, why isn't Spain winning by so many more goals? And I also thought, like, how did this Spanish team get completely decimated by Japan in the group stage match of like, you know, there's a certain level of, you know, I mean, I'm sure you recognize it much quicker than I could, but the style of play for Spain, it's kind of remarkable to me how gifted every single player is on a technical level. I mean, we're not seeing too many countries have players with almost an equal level amount of skill, whether it's a fullback or a striker, is so incredibly good on the ball. And the chemistry to know where everyone kind of is so impressive. So to be able to do that against the Netherlands and then almost not be able to do that at all against Japan is so odd. So that they seem like they deserve the victory, but for whatever reason, and obviously they got a goal that was taken back for offside. But just are Spain the real deal? That's my main question, because I can't necessarily tell if we should trust that they could get to the final and win the whole thing.
Yeah, I think they can win it. I think, like, with what you're saying, I think culturally they've clearly come and grown up with a ball at their feet, wanting to just dominate the ball, dominate an opponent. They very rarely just get the ball and pass it. They get the ball and almost draw people in before they pass it. I'm not just going to give it to a midfielder between the lines. I'm going to draw in all of their midfielders, so when I pass it to you, the person I've drawn in can't go defend you. Yeah. So I think they're playing the game at another level. And I'm not sure. I think tactically they're good, clearly. But I think it's the individual brilliance on the ball, getting into space, not fearing space, and just finding each other and having the technical ability to. I do think that scoring goals, which they solved yesterday to win the game, which is enough for them, that could be something that gets them late. But I think getting to the goal, there's been no team like them so far in the World Cup, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm watching a lot of these games through the lens of an American who watches the U.S. Women's National Team, and I'm just like, man, why am I jealous of this team and all their technical ability, or even just those slip passes from a midfielder to get a runner that's running inside the box? I'm like, the U.S., I don't think they did that even once in any of the games. I mean, you know, a lot of times we could talk about this a little bit, but like the discourse of this, especially being someone from England, you know, seeing how and having coached some of the players on the U.S. Women's National Team, a lot of the discourse is about the arrogance of the U.S. Women's National Team, because they've won the last two World Cups, and it almost, to me, it's like a little, it makes a little sense that they would be arrogant because they just won the last two World Cups. But I understand having some level of humility. But I just thought from a tactical level, there weren't those passes inside the box from a midfielder or an attacking midfielder to put pressure on those center backs. There were also, we said this a couple episodes ago, there were almost no overlapping runs from the fullbacks to create any pressure on their fullback, so their center back. So what did it, when just watching the U.S., what did you think were some of the like biggest concerns or issues?
So I think for me, the bit that got me was the width of the U.S. national team. I didn't feel like there was a ton of width. I felt like Dunny and Foxy played quite narrow, and I think when your fullbacks play quite narrow, you need to get width off someone else, because otherwise the field gets compact and you can't pass to Rose Lavelle in a pocket because there isn't one, because the field's so compact. And then you're getting Soph Smith giving that width and Rodman giving that width. Well, it gets them a million miles away from goal, and you can't get them the ball. You can't defend them in places where teams would like them to be, which is down by that corner flag and out the way.
Yeah.
So I think for me, tactically, in my opinion, I think getting width out of your fullback, someone like Sofia Huerta, like, I know I'm biased, but man, can she give width and cross the ball and pass to people in dangerous areas? And I think what that allows is the midfield then opens up because the fullbacks aren't in there or anywhere near it. And then maybe we can find Rose Lavelle and Lindsay Horan in a seam to play a slip pass to someone because our forwards are a little narrower and closer to goal. So yeah, I think the thing that was
okay
for me was we need to get some width. We need some width and open this midfield up and give ourselves a chance to get our players in the best positions for them to do what they do best.
Okay, Scott. Well, the one thing I didn't tell you that this is actually your interview for the U.S. Women's National Team coaching position, and you just nailed that question so well.
Yeah, I think I'm a couple of cycles away from that one, but.
No, it's a thing we talk about a lot, and I think this World Cup for the U.S. Women's National Team and just the U.S. Women's program, it just, you know, kind of throws a wrench into what the expectations were and maybe what the future kind of looks like. Obviously, there are players that are going to be leaving, new players that are going to have opportunities or players that are going to have a bigger role in the future. Given that you've worked with a lot of the players on the U.S. Women's National Team, what's the... You know, I mean, I'm sure there isn't necessarily a, you know, being English, working with Americans, I'm sure there's a deep personal kind of feeling of wanting the players to succeed individually but also wanting maybe your country to do well as well.
Yeah, no, 100%. I'm actually an American citizen now, so I can actually fully.
Let's go.
Yeah, I'm completely 100% invested in the US program and the federation because it's the federation that's given me the opportunity to do what I do right now. Almost all of my coaching education has been through the US federation, and most of the players that I've coached in our wonderful league, you know, are going to try and win and compete for the US. So I'm a little bit torn. I don't feel that close to the Lionesses, but I am enjoying seeing what they're doing, seeing the way they're playing. Again, I think Serena's done an unbelievable job. Tactically, super flexible. Maybe one other knock on us as a nation here is kind of sticking to that 4-3-3. When I seen the double pivot with Sonnet, I was doing backflips. everyone thinks that's a defensive thing, but it's not. Again, if you've got two sixes, you can't invert your fullbacks. They need to get away from the midfield and give us a little bit more balance. I'm fully invested. But you do have to be careful because obviously on our team right now, we've got Angelina, Quinny and Jordan Heitema. And I also want the absolute best for them too. So you find yourself like a bit of a soccer dad or a soccer mum, just cheating for everyone. I want everyone to do great.
I just want my kids to have a good time. Have fun.
I just want them to have a good time. the amount of pride, like I get butterflies just talking about the players, watching them perform, seeing them represent their nations. It's unbelievable.
It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, look, we've interviewed a lot of the players that are on the women's national team or at the World Cup in general, and there is definitely after when we interviewed Rose Lavelle right before the 2019 World Cup, I was like, this, I'm watching my niece succeed at the World Cup. This is beautiful.
Yeah, I know. Rose is the best, man.
So just to wrap up on the Spain Netherlands game, they did score an extra time with an incredible goal by Selma Parayuelo. Just what a move. I didn't think she would have that much space. I didn't think she would be able to even create that much space given, I believe she's the fullback, if I'm not mistaken. And I could be wrong. I'm not sure. She subbed in, but I don't remember who she subbed in for. But regardless.
We made a million subs.
she came in. And then got a great ball and just a little step. I don't even know. It wasn't a step over. It was just a little a deke or a jab step, as they say in basketball. And it disoriented the defender. It's really one of those things where it seemed like the defender did not know that the player with the ball was left-footed. That's what I felt like.
I know. I think they thought she was going to switch it and play to the player on the other side.
Right.
And, you know, she's a good player. Laura, who I work with at the Rain, knows a lot about it with working with the 20s prior to coming back to Seattle. So I think on a youth level, she's been doing that for a long time for Spain. Okay. I think she's at Real Madrid.
She's at Barcelona, by the way.
Barcelona. And so, yeah, unbelievable little shimmy just to shift the ball. And, you know, when you get to extra time, your legs start going as a defender. If someone gets a bit crafty and can move your feet a little bit, and what a strike as well. Yeah. I think she didn't know it had gone in because it hit the post. You could see her just waiting for the net to bulge somewhere. Yeah, what a finish.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of wild how when you make substitutions in games, it works out pretty well. I mean, no shade at anybody.
Well, I'm convinced that Spain, I think it was like their third one. I'm convinced they did like a fake concussion sub.
Oh, really?
The centre-back heads the ball, just clean heads the ball into midfield, and then just goes down like she's been hit by a train. No one's around her.
Yeah.
They sub her off. She looks like she's chilling on the bench. And then it came up concussion sub at the bottom, and they made six subs.
Wow, okay. I didn't even think about that this could be manipulated in some way.
That there was a strategy there, so they knew they could make six subs instead of five.
Okay. No, you look, this is part of look, if it's I think this is World Cup. This happens in this sport, you know. If the rules are adjusted in any way, people, you know, a true competitor will use every advantage. So I'm not. It's not even something I'm upset about. And it kind of will lead me into the conversation where we're going to be talking about Coors Light right now, because we all need to chill. And I think the one man who is chilling more than anybody is Lionel Messi in League's Cup. And I don't know if you've seen this video of Lionel Messi before he scored his free kick against FC Dallas to, I believe, either tie the game or get it pretty close. The referee is aligning the wall for FC Dallas, and there's footage of, like, you know, from a fan recording Messi set up for the free kick, and he is constantly moving the ball. He is moving it, just nudging it. Just kind of where I need it to be. And he pretends like he's spinning the ball to get the right location and pretends to be putting it in the same spot. But he's actually moving it like a few millimeters over and over and over. And then boom, he bangs in an incredible free kick. And, you know, everybody's happy. Every Apple TV employee is very happy. So that's so Lionel Messi gets our chill of the week, which I just created right now. So just a reminder, everybody, League's Cup, Coors Light is the official sponsor of League's Cup in 2023. So this summer, stay passionate and stay refreshed with an ice cold Coors Light for League's Cup 2023. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/Cooligans. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Thank you, Scott, for partaking and being a part of witnessing that gold that I just improvised and got to come up with. So,
mate, honestly.
Thank you. This is why I get paid the very minimal bucks to do what I do. Scott, don't mean to brag or anything.
Now's the time to start your next adventure behind the wheel of an exciting new Toyota hybrid. With the largest lineup of hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and electrified vehicles to choose from, Toyota has the one for you. Every new Toyota hybrid comes with Toyota Care 2-year complimentary scheduled maintenance, an exclusive hybrid battery warranty, and Toyota's legendary quality and reliability. Visit your local Toyota dealer today. Toyota, let's go places. See your local Toyota dealer for hybrid battery warranty details.
The other match that we had was Japan against Sweden. Another really, really good game, and one that really no one, I don't think anyone really predicted Sweden would get a victory here. There we go. Oh, you did predict. Oh, interesting. Because I saw a tweet and from Andre Carlisle, who covers women's soccer, great dude, and I don't have it in front of me, but he essentially just said, Sweden are not even that good. This is so annoying. That's all he said. they just find ways to win. And I didn't. Japan have been so good. Obviously, they've barely given up any goals in this tournament, and they. Look, my honest opinion of this game, I think Japan lost here rather than Sweden winning, if that kind of makes any sense. There were just a few mistakes that cost Japan, and they couldn't catch up. And you know, the post and just unfortunate bounces. They just couldn't get a goal there. But why did you think Sweden would win this game?
So I had Sweden making the final. That was my prediction. I had Sweden beating the US.
Wow.
I did have Brazil in the final with Sweden, so I'm only 50% good
okay,
here.
Okay.
I just think they look like the most. They look like they've been coached by Jose Mourinho for 20 years. They like they are dominant defensively. They're amazing on set pieces. They have pace. They have power. They have a good balance. To me, they're just a team that's been there and done it and have a history of it. And I never, ever think get the respect that they deserve. I do think in the first half, I'm not sure what the stats were, but I'm not sure Japan had a shot. I don't even know. I feel like in the first half, Sweden were absolutely brilliant. They were on the front foot. They were good in transition. They got the ball behind Japan whenever they could face forward in a pocket. And then always with Sweden, especially against Japan, set pieces will just kill you because they're unbelievable at them. And they're all so tall and dominant. And Japan aren't. It's something that they've definitely improved on without a shadow of a doubt. But that matchup in, I was concerned for the US on set pieces and we're massive. So I thought that was going to be something. And ultimately, they score off a set piece and then they get a penalty off a handball set piece. So, strange game. Again, Japan's second half were brilliant, especially when they brought Endo on. I thought Endo was fantastic. But it kind of panned out the way I thought it could.
Yeah, it felt like they didn't really find their stride until the second half, after giving up the second goal. I think the concern, especially when playing against a team that's just simply taller, right? And so set pieces are a concern. But when Japan is trailing in a game, they're really a different team. And this is kind of a thing we see in general with teams that are maybe dominant in their region. I would say the U.S. kind of suffers from this as well, where they're throughout their the 4 years in the cycle leading up to a World Cup, how many times are they in matches where they're actually trailing and have that in-game experience of like, all right, we're losing this game. Let's turn things around. It's like that isn't an experience most American players at that level are even getting. They're because they're usually just winning and dominating a lot of these games. So it's a thing I think can weirdly be this negative leading into World Cups. I mean, the U.S. is probably a different example because they did lose to England. They did lose to Spain in the lead-up to the World Cup and Olympics and blah, 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 and all this other stuff. But that is – it's just even just getting that experience of having that in-game kind of matchup. But the – yeah, I thought Japan was surprisingly I thought they handled it well. As far as the physical dominance that Sweden might have, and I wouldn't say it's a shame that Sweden won necessarily.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. It's just given that how amazing Japan has been, you sort of expected them to just be at the final. But that's not going to be the case. I do want to talk real quick about England. England is playing Colombia, and this is an interesting aspect because I don't know if a lot of people are aware, but in England, obviously plenty of cities and towns and stuff like that, but you are from Liverpool, and I mentioned earlier we connected over Everton, and when I went to Liverpool and I was asking people, how do you think England's going to do? What do you think of how Harry Kane did at the Euros, and people in Liverpool genuinely like don't really care about the success of the England national team. They might say like, I'll watch the final if they get there. But this is interesting because the Lionesses are kind of represent something a little bit different. So we were talking off air before about how the Lionesses mean something a little bit more to even to maybe Liverpudlians.
Yeah, I think I'd agree. I think, like, as a city, Liverpool, all we've ever felt like is that we've always been let down by governments, the monarchy. Yeah. No one cares about us. We get forgotten about. So we don't forget about that. So we support our teams. We support our players. We support our people. Like, honestly, I'd probably rather support Yerry Mina at Colombia than and James over there. Because, like, they're our people. Like, they play for us. So, it's a funky place. But the Lionesses, I think, have given a different perspective on it. The way they play, there's just a purity to it. They're together. They're collective. They've got the nation on their back. You know, we know that they're not, you know, making millions, but they're performing like they should. Right. So there's just been something that surprised the country, that's got the country to really see women's sports in a different light. And I think that's the thing with the Lionesses. They're not only doing it, they're winning. They're playing a good brand of football. And I get just as many texts now about the Lionesses than I definitely do about Gareth Southgate's England.
That's amazing. Yeah, there is. I think the, you know, in women's soccer, women's football, there's an inherent struggle that comes with just doing your job, right? And a different level of criticism than in men's football. So I think maybe that is the thing people from Liverpool can connect with the Lionesses on, of just like, I understand the struggle that you are going through.
We know you guys are getting on tiny flights and eating Subway sandwiches, and you're performing like that. What we got you.
No, that's beautiful. It's beautiful to see. I mean, I have a lot of Colombian friends. England will be playing against Colombia, so I think I'm favoring Colombia to maybe, this might be kind of an upset, but Colombia have been pretty good in this tournament. As far as England's chances or Colombia's chances, how do you think this game was going to pan out?
I think I see England going forward. I think Colombia will cause them some problems. I just think right now England are popping the ball about. They look like they have confidence. They've overcome a lot. I think the quality of the overall squad of England, even though it's a little bit depleted, I think just gets ahead of Colombia right now. Okay. But what I love about Colombia is they've used, like we talked about, the US maybe not being as tried and tested. Colombia have played top teams all running into this. A lot of their players have been in the U17 World Cups, the U20 World Cups. Like, the team feels tried, tested, and like fearless. So England are going to have to be careful.
They even got tested against the Irish for 22 minutes.
I know. I think England are going to have to be careful, but I think I've got the Lionesses nudging through just on this one.
Even without Lauren James.
She could end up being the best player in the world. Like, she can do everything, including silly things and stamping on people's backs, really.
You got to take the good with the bad sometimes.
You got to take the good with the bad, yeah. She's a maverick. But I think if they can make it through to a situation where she gets back, I think England are set up for a good chance. But what a game it is. I cannot wait to watch it.
Yeah, the one thing I'm hearing, I think – this was tweeted about a little bit, but I've heard that Becky Sauerbrunn wants anybody to win besides England. So it's
Becky, come on.
I've heard that.
Yeah, I'll give it a text about that one.
We'll do. Before we wrap up, we obviously got to talk a little bit about Everton. The Premier League season is starting today. This afternoon here in the East Coast. Let's just get through this, whatever therapy session this has to be. Obviously, lifelong Evertonian. You know, I adopted this team, even when I went to Liverpool, people were like, why did you do this to yourself? But thank you, I guess. But these last two seasons for Everton, how have you experienced it? What is it like to see this this struggle for your beautiful club?
Yeah, it's been awful. It's been awful. Like, they affect us like more than illness. Like, if they affect me more than like any illness I've ever had. They can ruin a week. They can ruin a day. They can ruin a weekend. They can also do the flip of that and make us feel like we're just on cloud nine. I think we've been in a real tricky situation with, you know, I think our new owner gets a hard time, Mashiri. Like, all we've ever prayed for at Everton for years is to have money and to be backed. And, like, the dude's backed us. Like, if you look at the figures, he's actually backed us. What we didn't say is back us, but back us, like, really smartly.
Right, right.
looks like we've signed some players on big money, on big wages, and maybe not with a huge upside or a sell-on or a big future, and just got ourselves in a hole. I remember being in New York, New Jersey, and I was actually crying in bed for the game that we stayed up with Lampard.
Yeah.
It felt like probably the best moments I'd had in years. Like, it was like joy, elation. I'm legit crying in bed. And then I started hearing the narrative of, no, well, we're better than that. Why are we praising this like we've won an FA Cup final? And I think the reason we feel that way is that we feel like the team's given us nothing for so long. So the sick, twisted fate of staying up on the last game of the season has been like wins for us. So I'm ready for us to get away from that. I'm ready to just have a boring season and get the club back on track. I think Dyche is the man for it. He talks common sense, which is what we want. The team are organised. They try and get the ball in the box. I think that the days of Everton are coming back. I think he's going to need time. It's bizarre to say that Sean Dyche, in my opinion, is the coach for Everton Football Club right now.
Okay.
I truly believe it, which is wild to say. But yeah, and I've heard really good things about Thelwell too. I think he did well at Red Bull with how he did his business. I can sense he's doing similar things now. Anana last year, we paid a bit of money for him as a young kid. Now it sounds like everyone wants him.
Yeah.
It looks like everyone we're looking at right now is young, hungry, a big upside. So yeah, I think the future looks brighter. Every time I go home, I'm at home next week, I go and see the new stadium. And again, it makes me want to just cry tears down on the Mersey, different tears. Mm-hmm. So I'm optimistic. And then obviously the women's side's doing great too. Brian's doing an unbelievable job. I went in with him last time I was home. He let me into everything, video, staff meetings out on the training pitch. I was at Finch Farm. So yeah, I love my football club more than they'll ever know. And I'm ready for there to be a turn.
Okay, yeah. I mean, look, this is how we gotta get the, you know, match day one take, which we just got, and then match day 38, and we'll see how how the tone has changed.
Yeah, come on.
I love yeah, we have this delusional optimism that even other Premier League fans have no idea where it comes from, but the last three seasons there were like two seasons where we were in first place for the first month of the season. And it's like, okay, is this what it's going to be like?
No. Well, obviously being E in the alphabet, we're always about sixth or seventh before the league even kicks off.
Exactly.
And I'm like, I'll take it. Can we just freeze that for 38 games?
Yeah, we need to maintain the Premier League table based on alphabet, and we should be fine. We might get a Europa League spot.
we'll be above that shite across the park and the two Manchester teams just on alphabet. So right, I'll right, take
Scott, thank you so much for doing this, man. This is amazing. It's great to get your insight, especially from a coach in women's football. You are now the assistant at OL Reign. How in general, obviously we had Bethany Balser on a couple months ago. Who we're just huge fans of, can you talk a little bit about just kind of the rest of the season? What are your kind of expectations? How are you feeling about the rest of the NWSL season?
Yeah, I'm feeling really good. I think we're 2 points off top right now, and we were the number one seed in the Challenge Cup. Didn't concede the goal, unbeaten through that. So I think in a really nice spot. I think we lost the most players for the World Cup, which was wonderful. Everyone stepped up. The players were brilliant. Bethany was team captain for, I think, the last two games. She's been outstanding. So, yeah, I think we're in a good spot. We're rolling, and we've got eight absolute superstars to come back to, you know, already a really good roster. Laura, who I work with, is my best friend, and trust me, she is the best in the business. She has an environment and creates a space where everyone is just authentic and happy to come to work, and then creates a football brand that is exciting. It scores goals, but really resolute defensively. I'm still learning from her every day. I feel happy here. We expect to win. We expect to be in and around championships. It's right where we are right now. We've just got to get everyone home, regroup, and do the business.
Yeah, I mean, as far as names that are being tossed around, far as a future U.S. Women's National Team coach, Laura Harvey is definitely up there. So obviously a good person to be working with and a good person to be learning from.
You know, honestly, she should be named for every job in the world. But you need to trust me on this. She is special and still relatively young. But I know right now it's full focus on Seattle and sending Rapinoe off on our terms and getting it done.
Okay. Yeah. Well, best of luck. I know, the playoffs have not always been too kind to the OL Reign the last couple of years, but wishing you guys the best of luck. So, Scott, thank you so much for doing this, man. This has been an absolute honor. So, truly, thank you so much for taking the time. Everybody, make sure you follow Scott, right? Scott, is it Scott _ Parkinson? What's the Twitter handle? You don't remember what it is? Look up Scott Parkinson. Somebody set it up for him. He doesn't know. He just doesn't.
I don't know.
Scott Parkinson _ Scott. I got it backwards. Okay. But there it is, everybody. Go show some love. Great dude. Everybody, make sure you follow us at Soccer Cooligans on all social platforms. Subscribe to the podcast here on YouTube. Shout out to everybody watching on DraftKings Network and Apple. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave a review if you have the time and we would appreciate it. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Scott Parkinson, best of luck to OL Reign, to the Toffees. And then we'll see how these Lionesses do this weekend. So Scott Parkinson, thank you so much. And everybody, we'll see you tomorrow. Peace.